of Kevin Glenn Mons and Laura Marie Mons. Yes, ma'am.
Good morning, and may it please the court, my name is Jennifer Schubert. I represent the appellee, Laura Mons. This case comes to this court on an appeal from an order of the Circuit Court of Virginia Beach. The order that was appealed from was an order finding that Mr. Mons was not in contempt of this court, but further finding that Mr. Mons did still owe Ms. Mons $10,000 in accordance with the party's agreement, which had been incorporated into an order of the trial court.
Ms. Schubert, can I interrupt you? Time goes by so fast when you're here before the court. Just a couple questions. On the account in which the $10,000 on January 27th was deposited by Mr. Mons.
Yes, Judge.
I know that Laura Mons' name is on the account. The records seem to indicate it was a joint account with her mother. Her mother's name is also on the account?
That is correct.
Is there any other name on the account?
The record reflects, Judge, that Ms. Mons testified that her son, Zach, is linked into all her accounts, and she responded to that.
But is his name on the account? If we were to see the statement on the account, would it indicate Laura Mons and her mother and Zach, or just the two of them?
Judge, I'm not sure the record reflects that specific question, but I think the court can look at Zach's testimony as well. He testified that he had access to those funds and that he could retrieve those funds at any time. So in conjunction with his testimony and Ms. Mons' testimony that he had access to those funds, that he was linked into all of his accounts, I think the court can fairly assume that, yes, his name was on the account in such a capacity as would have allowed him to retrieve those funds at any time.
So his mother had set it up so that he could access any monies in that account and withdraw them himself.
That is correct, Judge, and that's what she testified to.
Okay.
Counsel, under Jenkins, and it seems like the appellant conceded that we have no jurisdiction to address the dismissal of the show cause.
Yes, Judge.
Why would we have jurisdiction to hear whether or not the award of $10,000 is proper?
Judge, I would submit that you do not. The court in Jenkins v. Mara held that any finding related to the fact that there was no contempt would not be appealable to this court. And so this matter comes on that same footing to this court. And that is the first reason, Judge, why we're asking that this court dismiss the appeal. Because under Jenkins v. Mara, neither the common law nor the statutes have awarded this court the authority to make a ruling with that. And, Judge, the additional issue of the finding being made in conjunction with that is that they are one and the same. In order to make a finding that Mr. Mons either was or was not in contempt, the court would have had to make that underlying finding of whether he was in violation of the order. Judge, the second reason for our request to dismiss this appeal is that Mr. Mons waived his objections. The Supreme Court rules require...
Can I go back to Jenkins, though? Because isn't this very different from Jenkins? In Jenkins, you had the person who had sought contempt, and contempt was denied against the former spouse, appealing. In this case, like in the Green versus Robertson case that this court released last Tuesday, a week ago today, you had a situation in which the appellant was the person that contempt was sought against, and that was the person appealing. And so the Supreme Court was very clear in Jenkins that if contempt is not found and you're appealing the contempt finding, you can't do that. Here, Mr. Mons isn't appealing the fact that he was not found in contempt. He's appealing, as in the Green versus Robertson case that we released last Tuesday, he is appealing the other thing that was done by the court when it found no contempt. And in Green, we said, you asked for it in that motion in the pleading, and so since the court found against you, we can hear that issue. We're not hearing an issue of an appeal of the contempt presumably Mr. Mons wouldn't want to appeal that he was not found in contempt, nor did Mr. Green. But why isn't this very different than the Jenkins case, which all was about contempt? Here, as in Green, it's something in addition to contempt, and the contempt is not even being appealed.
Judge, I understand that Mr. Mons tried to make that distinction in his brief. And my response to that would be that the court in Jenkins did not differentiate or make any rulings related to who would have the right to make that appeal. It does not treat the parties different as to which party or which issue they're appealing. Mr. Mons, in fact, admitted that this is one pleading. The only pleading in front of the court was a contempt issue. And so all of the rulings underneath which the court made the rulings that it did were related to whether Mr. Mons was in contempt.
Mr. Mons argues, well, you know, the court had no authority to order the $10,000 because it didn't find me in contempt. But as we said in Green, which is not a published case, it's a memorandum opinion, but as we also said in Zidane versus Weston, Zidane 1 and Zidane 2, both of which are published, this court said, if, and in those cases, we reversed the contempt finding and remanded it for the court to then decide on the other issues, and the trial court then ordered the money paid, they then appealed that back to us saying, you can't do that if you didn't find contempt. And we affirmed what the trial court did. We said the trial court did have the authority to do that in Zidane versus Weston too. So I guess what I'm asking you is, you know, you're sort of making the, you were good enough to alert the court to what Mr. Mons argued as to why the court couldn't order the $10,000. But if we disagree with that, and we think Jenkins doesn't apply, then we have to get to your second assignment of error, right?
Yes, and Judge, the issues are different. So the first reason is related to the jurisdiction of the court to hear the appeal, and that's what Jenkins v. Mara addressed. Another, our third assignment of error, Judge, that are grounds for the dismissal of the appeal, is that this court has held in Shoup v. Shoup, that is a case at 31 Virginia App 621 that addresses the jurisdiction or the authority of the trial court to make the additional findings that it did, even when there is a finding that there is no contempt. And so this court held in that case that the trial court does have the authority to make those additional findings even when it does not find a contempt. So that is a separate issue.
Well, here you've got equitable distribution. So you have in the equitable distribution statute, subpart K, says that the court has continuing jurisdiction to enforce its orders in a divorce decree, particularly the equitable distribution orders, right? And this is all
correct
about equitable distribution.
Yes, Judge.
So if I could just follow up on that then, the trial judge here seems to make a factual finding that there's no acceptance. He never changes that. He then says, Mr. Mons, while he was on the stand, why would you just arbitrarily give your son $10,000 when you still owe child support that's staring down at you, as well as a $100,000 equitable distribution lump sum payment that is due in a month, and you've only paid $10,000? And Mr. Mons said, I didn't give him a gift. I wrote a check for $10,000 to my wife, and I wrote Zach, and I made it payable to her, and I only wrote Zach in the memo line to remind her that she had indicated that she would let him have the money, but it would have been a gift from her. I'm paying that equitable distribution because I'm having a hard time finding the money to even pay that, which Mrs. Mons acknowledged because she said, I know you're trying to get the money and Sue's house hasn't sold and so forth. So why, if Mr. Mons puts Mrs. Mons as the payee on the check, and as the trial judge noted, there's all this money he owes from child support to another $90,000 in equitable distribution within a month that he's got to pay. Why on earth is the trial judge asking, would this be a gift all of a sudden of $10,000 to his son?
Judge, I think in order to address that, let me first point out that the trial court's comments about whether there was acceptance were said in a way that was more of a question, not a ruling. In fact, at the end of the evidence, the trial court made a specific ruling that he was finding that it was a gift. And so the back and forth between the trial court asking questions of the witnesses essentially was an effort to try to inquire at that time. And the judge specifically said in the transcript that he was looking at the credibility of the witnesses, and of course that's why we give the trial court deference, is because they have the ability to do that. So based on the record that's before the court, I think that you need to look at the other factors that related to this gift. There was intent. Mr. Mons did write Zach's name on the memo of the check. He had access to this account. Mr. Mons did, which is where he had deposited prior funds.
Stop you there, because he could have written Zach's name as the payee on the check, but he wrote it to Laura Mons, and the amount was the same amount that he'd written for an equitable distribution payment minus the $455 in child support for in November. So he wrote her a check for $10,000, and then he wrote a deposit slip and put her name on that. And so obviously the relationship between them was very strained. They only communicated by text and email. So I guess I'm having a hard time understanding donative intent here. And we have a Supreme Court case, Mountjoy, that says determining whether it's a gift or not is a question of law. So if it's a question of law, whether it's a gift, and the factors in that are something we've got, such as donative intent, delivery, and acceptance, or the tests we've got to look at, why here, given what he did, is it not, is the trial court, given what else he said, not plainly wrong in finding that it was a gift?
The trial court is not plainly wrong, Your Honor, because the evidence that it was a gift outweighs the evidence that it does not. If you look at the factor of intent alone, you have evidence in writing that Mr. Mons intended for this to be a gift. He did write, the memo line says "for," and he wrote the name Zach. He followed that up with a text message and a voicemail to his son that indicated his intent that money was for Zach. He followed up a month later.
But his hope that his wife would give the money to Zach is what he testified to.
Well, and Judge, that evidence is sufficient with just the delivery question as to how the money was going to get to him. He assumed that the mother would give that money to Zach and tried to make sure that intent was followed out by making sure that Zach knew that it was intended for him. In fact, that is what he testified. Mr. Mons testified that the reason he texted Zach was because he wanted to make sure that he received the money. And in fact, to address the question about whether, and the trial court judge had asked this as well, why would this man just hand over $10,000 to his son? Well, you can see
when he owes his wife $90,000 plus child support that he's got to pay within a month.
Well, and Judge, I think if you look at the testimony of Mr. Mons, it's a little bit inconsistent. Mr. Mons started out saying that the first payment was $10,000, was also for child support, and that he paid it, a year in advance. But then he didn't pay in January. His testimony is inconsistent.
So you would agree with Judge Beals that the question of donative intent is a question of law, but the way that you determine the question of law is applying the facts to the circumstance, and you believe that the judge made a credibility determination supporting your client's theory that this was indeed a gift.
Yes, Judge, that is correct.
Let me go back to something Judge Beals raised earlier. I see your time is running out, and I want to give you an opportunity to help me get through this. I actually went and pulled up the Green case that Judge Beals had referred to. Don't feel bad if you don't know about it, neither Judge Frank nor I. It came out on March 20th, which was 6 days ago, or 8 days ago, so don't feel bad that you don't know about this
Thank
case.
You, Judge.
But the point that's made in the opinion, and I'll make sure you know this, Judge Beals wrote it. He's a very smart guy, right? But the thing that was pointed out in this case is that what seemed to drive the case was that in the request for contempt that was made by the person seeking contempt in that case, there was information or statements made with regard to what remedy was sought. And encompassed in that remedy was reimbursement of money or, you know, payment of money or whatever, which essentially, as I read the case, put the issue of what the money was for and what the trial court could do squarely before the court. So therefore, the appellant in that case was entitled to appeal. In your request for contempt, what did you specifically ask for?
Judge, in our respect, and I see my time is up. May I answer your
question?
Yes,
ma'am.
Our request was related just to the show cause contempt powers of the court.
Was there any mention of the $10,000?
Not specifically. The mention was that he had violated the order, that Mr. Mons had violated the order, and that we were asking the court to enforce the order, which is why our argument is that under the contempt powers of the court, it is a necessity for the court to determine.
So you pled this purely as a contempt case?
Yes, Judge. However, the court in Shoup v. Shoup is what dictates the ability of the trial court to also make additional findings in order to enforce the court's order. In that case, you are dealing specifically with another case where it was a domestic relations case where they had incorporated the order into the
final decree.
So you're
saying that this was more in the nature of remedial powers that the court had available to it?
Yes, Judge. The trial court did exactly what the contempt power is intended to do, to allow the court to enforce the order. Otherwise, public policy would dictate if they did not find that Mr. Mons, if the court was not allowed to find that Mr. Mons owed that $10,000, my client would have to file another action and address that at another time.
You're on good footing. Even though you haven't had an opportunity to read the Green case, you cited some principles that Judge Beals cited in the Green case. So,
Thank you, Judge. We'll come down
and greet counsel.
It's a very recent case. I didn't expect you to necessarily know about
it. They did.